This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. A post-draft podcast. Didn't think we would leave you hanging. Botch was in Dallas over the weekend. He's back. I was on the air both Friday night and Saturday covering it for the radio station, and here we are, reunited again as we work from the draft to National Hockey League free agency. The PatCast, always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express. It was a good weekend for the BCHL. I think they had seven guys drafted down in Dallas, but of course the focus of our program here is the Canucks. But if you're in the market for a vehicle, you know what I say every podcast, check them out online, eagleridgegm.com, or if you want to visit the showroom, 2595 Barnett Highway out in Coquitlam. Bocce, you're back. How are you?
I am. I'm doing well. I'm glad to be back in the comfortable confines of the Vancouver weather. It was like oppressive, fucking brutal, like 400, like it felt like you were in an oven. I got there on the Thursday morning, get up. Yeah, I'm going to walk over to Benning's availability. It was like four blocks away. I got there and I was like, my shirt was, I had this pink shirt and was soaked through, dripping from my forehead. Like it looked ridiculous. And I just was like, what the hell happened? And people looked at me, you don't walk in Dallas. Certainly not in the summertime. And I did make that mistake. So the heat was brutal, but good times were had. Information was shared. Arguments were had. New people were met.
Pictures were taken.
And overall, a successful weekend, I think.
Speaking of photos, this was my takeaway from the distance that I was from the draft itself. Like, you talk about you sweating and looking disheveled.
Yeah.
Like, Jim Benning, prior to the draft and then Friday night, like, we created Tuesday Jim, right, on the trade deadline a few years ago.
Right.
Like, there was sort of a revisitation of Tuesday, like the smiles, and on Friday night after they had selected Quinn Hughes, like he's dry, cracking jokes in the scrum, like he's just holding court there, like more, bring it, like yeah. I'm not, you know, usually he has that look, like, oh, am I done yet? Like, have you guys asked all your questions? Like, he looked from again this distance, it was like more, keep coming, I want to keep talking about this guy. Like he couldn't have looked happier than he did on Friday night.
No, I think it's a great metaphor all for the entire organization up and down, because it does really feel like there's almost, you talk about there's two gyms or two Canucks. Like there's these two opposing directions that they're always going in. Like half the time they're trying to speed up the rebuild. The other half they're saying we're going to draft and develop. We go to past two drafts, they've been swimming upstream. 150-pound center last year, 5'10" defenseman this year. It's like, fuck, like look at these guys. They're part of the revolution. The NHL is changing, and the Canucks are on the cutting edge. And then I just saw, like, Benning was just on 650, and I think Dhaliwal just tweeted out, Benning's looking for more grit and toughness in free agency. And it's like, God, they're always looking for grit and toughness and the next Bergeron in free agency. Yet, you know, and the whole draft didn't go this way, but if you look at the top picks from the past 2 years, I mean, that's skill above all else, and we just never see that translated at the pro level. And I think overall, they do a good job at the draft, and Jim seems to have a lot of fun. And like, we've seen it before with him there. He's looser there. I think you saw it the first day, even the Thursday. He was laughing a few times in our scrum. He's got his hair all done. Freshly colored, I guess. He looks fresh and young and ready. And then I'm telling you, like the season will start and it'll be the whole different gym. I wish a couple of things. One, I wish they had more picks to play with, because this is where they do, I think, their best work. And it still boggles me that we can't collectively all get on board the fact that the team and its situation and the guy who's running it, you know, the best course of action is to get them as many picks as possible. Because here we are in free agency and they're like interested in Jay Beagle. Like, shoot me now, man. Like, you know how awful it would be if you have Sutter on one line and Jay Beagle on another. It's like more than half the game, there's nothing happening on the ice.
There was the one photo of that scrum on Thursday. And just, again, knowing the lay of the land and how these scrums work, I could tell that Jim was turned to you. And the smile, like, I don't even know what the question was, but yeah. I didn't need to know the question because the photo was all I needed to see. And he was just beaming. Like, what did you do to make him so happy ahead of the draft?
I don't, like, he was in a, he was in Tuesday gym mode, like, right from the start. And I was trying to, I think I was going down direct, I was angling him down at the Hannafin Road. And I think that the gears started turning and he figured out where I was going and he said, "Where are you going with this, Jason?" He starts laughing. And there was the other time, like I said, something like, "How many players do you like?" And he said, "9." And he said so quickly, "Jim, are you messing with me? Really, 9? He's like, "No, I'm not messing with you. I'm really 9. We like 9 guys." So, a couple good moments for him. And I think it was a great moment for the city and the franchise, and we'll see how it all pans out. But right now, I have never seen collectively the city like this ever. Like going back to, I've been here since 2005. I have never seen the city so collectively on board a first round pick as they are on board Quinn Hughes. Like this, it's not just, I think it's the position defense. And I think it's because he's an electric skater and he's got skill. And I also think that a lot of people are actually jacked that he's small. Like people are like, because that's the modern, it's the way the league is going. And I think it's, and people want a piece of that, of being part of the modern NHL. And so much of the early years of the Benny Linden regime have been, you know, there's been a lot of prehistoric decisions made along the way.
Well, I can tell you, being on the radio and taking some phone calls immediately after the pick, and I'm sure you felt it in social as well, but being down in Dallas, for me, my takeaway from Friday night after the first round was the excitement was those things that you talked about, but also, you know, the dominoes fell the Canucks' way. Like that, you know, forget you being here since 2005. For people that have been around since 1970,
yeah,
let's be honest, the balls have not bounced the Canucks' way very often. Jim himself said, like, we have no luck in the lottery,
right,
but look what happened. Like, things started to turn a little bit ahead of them. And, you know, when it got to Detroit's pick at 6, they knew right then and there that they were going to get, or the fan base knew that they were going to get, you know, either Zadina. As we found out, it was never going to be Zadina. Well, I shouldn't say
given who was left, they knew they're going to get Zadina or Hughes.
Right. And so
I don't think they're going to go Dobson with
that. It was
that
just
pick.
A fan base was like, shit, like, this stuff never happens to the Canucks. Things kind of broke the way because all of those draft previews, all those mock drafts that you made me read, like, I'm so pissed off at you now. Because,
why?
Because
didn't you feel smarter for it?
No.
Why?
Show me the mock draft that had Barrett Hayton going 5th overall.
Well, I didn't see one that
exactly.
had 5th overall. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that the mock drafts didn't make you smarter.
No, I'm pissed off at you and the mock draft.
Okay, hold on. No, timeout. Because you had seen all those mock drafts, when Barrett Hayton did go 5th overall, your eyes lit up. You were like, well, I can't believe what's happening. And that is how everyone reacted, right? Everyone that kind of wasn't in the know. Like Quinn Hughes, couldn't believe the guy that went 5th overall. There were gasps in the gallery, in the media. There were gasps on the draft floor. And I think that one of the things the mock drafts didn't take account of was the fact that there were very few top-end centers in this draft. Because after Hayton went, there wasn't another center taken until number 18, okay? So the two top guys that went, Kokiniemi and Hayton, were probably, you can make the case, maybe overdrafted, but teams wanted that, coveted that position. And it turns out the Canucks were super high on Hayton as well. He was on their top 9, and he could have been a choice for them at 7, which, I mean, if I wouldn't even, like, the difference between where we are now as a city and where we would have been if the Canucks grabbed 8 and 7, it's like, apparently it's like an alternate universe. I really don't want to take part in that one.
But the mock drafts set you up to be shocked for that moment. If you had not read them, you would have just seen Hayton and been like, okay, Hayton. But because you had seen so many mock drafts and no one had Hayton going that high, you got to enjoy the shock with the rest of us when he was taken.
All right, I got to process that a little bit, but I'll take your word on it and get back to me because I know you like to go back over all the mocks after the fact, but it sounded like you spent a ton of time on the plane going back through past drafts trying to find short defensemen.
I couldn't find many, man.
So now as you go back in time and over these mocks, let me know when you come upon the one that had Barrett Hayton going fifth
overall. I will. I'll be
bottom line is the Canucks got a guy that they just didn't think was going to be there. And look, I had fully bought into this. University of Michigan, played for Jeff Blashill. He's not getting past the Wings
right.
at six. So,
and you, but the word is the Wings weren't going to take
right.
him. You knew that?
Well, since we've heard that after the fact.
Yeah.
But heading into the draft night itself, like I was willing to buy that storyline. It made sense. There were a lot of dots to connect there that, you know, Hughes would have made sense for the Red Wings. The Red Wings are in a world of hurt like the Vancouver Canucks are. They can use all sorts of things. I like the Red Wings draft, though. I mean, they got Zadina. They got...
Was it Foligno at the end?
Yeah, Foligno, that's right. And then they had two picks early in the
so
Foligno as well.
Potentially, you know, you could argue a top 15 talent. Zanina is a top 3 talent. Yeah, they killed it. Like, they killed it. And then
the Islanders.
They got two top picks at the top of the second round. That first one, who did they get? Bergeron? He's really good. And then, yeah, the Islanders get Wahlstrom and Dobson back-to-back at 11 and 12. And... you know, if they had picked those guys at 4-5 or 5-6, you'd be like, fuck, that's a great draft. So, you know, there are a couple teams. And that's why, and there were tons of guys, really good guys available in throughout the second round. And I just kept watching it thinking, like, this is why you trade for extra picks. This is why you trade, you know, you make moves to try to get second rounders. Hell, extra, can you imagine extra first rounder if they had been able to pedal off Sutter for another first rounder, and they got, you know, because the end of the first round, you were getting guys that had talent to be top 15, or teams were getting guys that had talent to be top 15 picks. And I also think, like, if they had another third rounder, the Madden pick would have been easier to take, because Madden's a project. Madden's like, you know, let's bet that we're smarter than everyone else in the room. We're going to get the no point guy or low point guy because we like certain traits that he has that we haven't seen in other guys. And we like the fact that, you know, he's another 150 center who's got room to grow and get stronger. Like he's small, like he's built like a French fry. And, but you have, to me, it's a luxury pick, right? Like, oh, maybe he can be the next Gaudette. Well, Adam Gaudette is a special story. There's very few guys like him. But if you have a couple third rounders, you can take a guy like that, and then you can take one of the guys that had more offensive production that project better, you know, over the course of their career.
I didn't mind the Jet Wu pick at 37. Like, you know, jury's out. We'll see what happens.
You know they're thinking, right?
Yeah.
You know what happened. They got Hughes at 7 and then said, now what? Now we need a defensive defenseman that can hit. Like, that is for sure the conversation that went on there. You agree?
Yeah, I don't dispute that or dismiss that in any way. Time's going to tell, right? Like, I mean, we're 2 days removed from the draft. We'll see what happens. I don't mind the Jet Wu pick. Everything that happened after Wu, though, to me was somewhat underwhelming the rest of the draft. When you talk about guys like Tyler Madden.
Well, Madden's a letdown, but
this Utinen guy, look, he's a name on a piece of paper to me at this point. I'm not going to sit here and say that I've seen him play, but
right. There
are some that, you know, comparables, and you look at other guys that, you know, the U18s for the Finnish program, and he's a captain. Like, there are things to like,
yep.
But I can't sit here and tell you that I've got the book on him, and yet he falls into that profile too of, you know, skill, undersized, perhaps a project. And we'll see what happens.
I don't, like, he's not an offensive skill. Like, even he says he's uncomfortable playing the power play.
What
you can
was
do
he
it.
Doing there at the draft, by the way? Like, guys taking that deep?
Crazy.
Like, if you're in the neighborhood, if you live in Dallas, sure, drop by on the second day. But, you know, I was surprised.
So was I. I was pretty shocked he was there. But he gets taken, and he seemed to enjoy it. He seemed to have a good time. I mean, there are worse places to go, probably, if you're in Finland, than going to Texas in the summertime. And who knows, maybe he was going to Austin for a vacation, hang out, watch some music for a week. But I, you know, that's a good pick. That's a that's a defensible pick. That's a fine. I think that the one, if you have questions, if you want to question the Madden one, I think that's fair. I think Jet Wu is defensible. Utnin, I think he brings certain leadership qualities. And I do know, like, executive will say at points during the draft, we got to get a guy who's a captain, or we got to get a guy who's a winner, or, you know, right. That is shit that
the
is
intangible.
Yeah, get me some intangibles. And a lot of those guys that were drafted after Quinn Hughes, you heard a lot of talk about the intangibles. But the most intriguing, I think, is the 5'7" Russian kid, 140 pounds, but he blew up the Russian Junior League for more than 100 points. That's an interesting pick. And the goalie, the total project. Long-term project.
Right. And we'll see a few of them here the development camp next week. Before then, there's a lot of work to be done on the UFA front. We'll talk about that in a sec. But people want the goods. They want the behind-the-scenes stuff. That's what the podcast is all about.
Sure,
so,
yeah. I know all the behind-the-scenes stuff.
I'm sure you do, and you wrote about it. We got a surprise Provies. I didn't see that coming. Like, forget the Barrett Hayton pin. I did not see. I thought hung up your Provie pin at the end of the season. I didn't see a draft Provies coming, so that was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, no, if I'm at the draft, I will do a Provies. So I had some time. Why not put it together? A lot of love shit happened over the course of the weekend. But there was definitely some behind the... And, you know, I spent most of the weekend. It was like three guys from Vancouver. Like, you weren't there.
I was not.
You should have been. But Beecher was there. JD. And then this Cam, do you know this Cam Robinson guy?
I know of him. I've had some interaction with him
on
Twitter.
But I thought he was I wasn't sure about him because, like, his Twitter handle, I think, is Crazy Joe.
Crazy Joe Vola, isn't it? Like the Seinfeld reference.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he's got the hair, like the moppy hair.
And I'd seen the hair in the profile pic at times, but I saw some actual, like, photos this time.
Right. And you wonder, like, is that for real? Like,
I did wonder, is that for real? I have to say, like,
and
that
it is. I was there. It is for real. But this guy is, like, he's extremely bright. I thought he was one of the, in terms of media, one of the MVPs of the weekend. Like, he asked great questions. I think all of those guys, it was almost like I hadn't seen them since April, and it's almost like they went to some finishing school, like some kind of journalism school. I was like, who the fuck are these guys? Like, Beecher was asking great questions, and he was out there, you know, talking to people, getting like inside information. I thought, like, wow, these guys are like socializing around the draft floor. They're watching everything that's going down. It's translating.
Our boys are growing up. Watch. Are we like proud parents? Is that the...
It's like, fuck. And I got, like, I meant to write this in the Provies. I meant to give him a shout out, but Beecher did. Okay, Canucks Army did 100 profiles. Right. 100 deep. Now, to give you, like, every NHL team, they only go 100 deep in terms of, like, their lists go 100. And their guys on their 100 that never even get drafted. Like, that's how different everyone's lists are. But Canucks Army went 100 deep. Beecher did 80 of them. 82,000 words. That dude wrote about prospects in the past, like, whatever, few weeks.
I saw him tweet at one point that, like, 100,000 words, and I stopped to think about that. And I was like, damn. Like, you know, 1,000 words, you know, I know 1,000 words is a sizable undertaking for a column. He's 100,000 words.
Yeah, but so. It's not just writing shit at the top of your head. It's like so much. There's so much involved.
Well, watching video and
breaking
the
down the analytics.
And,
right, yeah, man. Yep. Like I can't even imagine.
It is an amazing project, and I know that people in the league would look at and lean on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when I hear that, if someone said, like, "What do you think that's worth?" I would go. I'd buy that for $100,000. Like, I'm sure Beecher probably got, like, he didn't get $100,000. I'm pretty confident on that. So, anyways, all those guys did great because I was worried going in, you know, how are these scrums going to go? Am I going to have anyone to play off with? But, you know, one of those guys always seemed to be around when I was back in the back room talking to the players or I was talking to Jim, and they drove the engine. I'd be super excited if they were around and that's how they were all season. Because there's going to be a time that you and I aren't around. Like, who's going to carry the ball, you know?
But that's the issue that we run into during the season. they're not there.
I don't know what happens during the season, but they shine at the draft.
Well, they love the draft. They do. We know that.
They shine there,
prospects
man.
Camp too. So that's good. I'm glad to hear that. And we've always said the more the merrier, more questions, more storylines, more angles.
Yeah.
It produces better stuff. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. And so I was with those guys and then we were at the media event and then that's when Drancer, this, the craziest entrance I like literally I've ever seen. If you film that, and could go back in a portal and show me that video of that entrance, like 3 or 4 years, I would have been like, that is photoshopped or who faked that? Cause he comes straight.
Forget 3 or 4 years ago, too. He brought me along to the draft in Buffalo 2 years ago.
The jorts we here.
Airbnb, right. Jorts, chicken wings, Couldn't get past the bouncer at the one place because of the jorts. That was two years ago.
No, man. He came in there like he looked, I don't even know, like royalty or something like that. His chest is out. He's coming strutting in and right beside him. Like they've been, you know, BFFs forever. Is Sean Thornton? They come fucking cruising. And I'm like, holy shit. Look at this duo. And those two guys didn't have a care in the world. Like Sean Thornton knows everyone. Along the way, like Drance is like shaking hands with people. And then he comes to my table, and I'm with JD Beecher and Cam, Crazy Joe Cam. And like there was, I had been making fun of this like tray of deviled eggs. Like who the fuck would eat deviled eggs at a bar? I've never even heard of it. And they were like at our table. There had been like this butcher block of deviled eggs that had been sitting there for a bit. And I'd been like just riffing on like how ridiculous it is that they would present deviled eggs. Like anyone would eat a deviled egg. And without a word of a lie, like Drancer had not even said hello. He reaches down in the middle of everyone, grabs a deviled egg and pops it in his mouth.
No,
and
like, come on.
Man, look at this guy. You just ate a deviled egg. He's like, damn right I did. He's like, what? So and then that guy, he's got it together. This is fresh off his Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, I was gonna say red carpet at the Kentucky Derby.
Oh yeah, and then he dropped this one. He goes, "Yeah, so I PJ'd to the Kentucky Derby." I'm like, "The fuck is PJ?" He goes, well, "You don't know? That's what you don't talk to the players. That's what they call private jetting." I'm like what?
He PJ shamed you though?
Yeah, like, oh yeah. Totally.
Oh, man.
You don't know?
He drops a deviled egg on you.
Do you not PJ?
The PJ.
Oh, he crushed
shame.
Me, totally crushed me.
Oh.
Yeah.
So,
guy, man.
Are you thinking, just back to these protégés that are coming along and coming out of their shells, like, are you thinking of growing your hair out now? Like, is that something?
Like Cam? No, yeah. I mean, that's, like, I almost wanted to sit him down and be like, you know, the aura around him doesn't really like that. Like he's very sharp. Like he can go back 2-3 years. He can tell you, you know, who was drafted in the '60s and what happened to this. Like those guys spent a ton of time researching and they've got the knowledge to show it. So I did for a moment think maybe I should sit him down and tell him like maybe he needs like a new, like a makeover, like a better, more professional haircut, but the hair sets him apart. You know, that's, Crazy Joe Cam. Like, that's how I know him. But
okay, and I haven't met the guy. But again, I like his work, and I think we've had some interaction social. I would say, though, at this stage of the proceedings, as he gets some traction in an event like this, get out from behind the Crazy Joe Davola Twitter handle.
Maybe. I wouldn't, yeah.
I don't think it's great for the brand. Like, I would, if I'm
right.
me and I'm doing good work, like, I want the world to know. Like, I don't want to hide behind
maybe.
That.
Yeah.
Keep
well,
the hair.
He does have Cam in his
I know,
name.
But.
But you may have a point because I honestly do agree. I always saw the Crazy Joe thing and I was like, is this guy is he a serious prospect guy or is this guy fucking with me? There was a while there where I wasn't quite sure. But he's on the ball, man. He's sharp. If I were running a sportsy, you know, media group, I would hire him up in a flash.
The Botchford Empire is going to grow here.
Yeah.
He's going to take these guys,
if it were my,
hire them, send them out into the world.
Yeah.
We won't know what hit us.
My ecosystem, I'd have all those guys on my team, man.
All right. So one other thing that came out of one of those Jim Benning scrums, I think on the Thursday, there was another very early on mention of Guillaume Brisebois.
And like, for the record, no one asked about Brisebois. No one asked about the defense. The question was something like, you know, did you have to go in a direction? Some, you know, riff on best player available, which he was asked maybe 300 times in the past 4 months leading up to this. But it was literally 45 seconds into the first day, the first availability, and we got a Brisebois! I was like, fuck, man.
Right. So I heard that, and I was like, this organization is so in on this guy because the same thing happened going back to Penticton last year, and you and I were there, and we know that he didn't have a great Penticton.
No.
And yet he was the first name off Weisbrod's tongue
right
when he was asked about players, and here we are, you know, at the draft, and Jim Benning's mentioning Brisebois again. And so, like, that stood out at me, and I thought, like, damn, like, they love this guy. And I'm starting to worry that they're making organizational decisions behind the scenes based on the fact that they've got Brisebois.
Wow.
And I hope that's not the case.
I don't think that's...
But I tweeted out something to the effect of, you know, I can't believe how often that name is offered up.
Yeah.
And
there was nothing wrong. And you said something like, they really believe in him.
Yeah.
We'll see how it works
out. Time will tell.
Time will tell, yeah.
But then Renaud Lavoie of TVA, he tweets...
You got mauled, man.
He tweets that I've seen this guy a couple of times, and I know what the GM sees. So from there, then all this French media, just piling on.
They wanted to crush
And then
you.
Brisebois' former junior team, the Charlottetown, whatever they are, the Islanders... Oh, yeah, no, they liked Renault's tweet.
They did?
Yeah, like, they're just piling, like, everybody's coming off the top rope, and I just, like, I'm not even at the draft, and I'm just, like, I thought I was minding my own business, sort of, and I just was taking a pounding.
Yeah, like, that's always the get-out-of-jail-free card, like, it could be bad, it could be good, time will tell, we'll see what happens, like, who gets mad about that? And the French guys came for you big time.
But just the fact that he has seen him a couple of times, and that was enough.
Oh, that's all he
and
needs.
And I'm not writing him off. Like, he's 20 years old, his first pro season. But to me, he profiles, and I've read enough about him, too, and seen other
dude. Like,
he profiles as, you know, a bottom.
Every single person you talk to, no matter if they're high or low on him, say he profiles out as a 6 or 7 in the NHL. Everyone.
Right.
I bet, like... I want to hear what the French media says.
I don't know.
Is he going to be more than a 6 or 7? You've got to be in your top 4, Renaud?
I don't know.
Does he?
I felt it was an attack on me for a pretty simple, innocent tweet.
I wish you went back, though, Adam. But is he top 4? Is he going to be a top 4, Renaud?
Because he certainly didn't bring any offense in his first pro year.
Look, even the people that are highest on him say the same thing.
He skates projects well, fine.
In the bottom pairing on a defense, he's a 6 or 7 guy. And you can't... The whole point is, this is nothing against Brisebois, but you can't list him off as one of your top prospects. And if you do, you got a serious hole in your prospect list. And they conceded that over the course of this weekend. They went D3 of the first 4. So to me, that's not a big... you know, support of Brisebois and what he can do, and Judd talked about it. They saw a hole in their, we all saw it. Like, it was obvious. They had a hole in their defensive prospects. They needed it, and certainly at the pro level and in the minors, anywhere in the lineup, they didn't have anyone, and they haven't had anyone like Hughes in a long, long time, maybe ever. A guy who can skate like that, handle the puck like that. Man, I loved his confidence too. Sharp guy. Very quick in terms of when you're going back and forth with them. Great hockey IQ. They definitely lack that. And, you know, bringing in a guy like Jet Wu, who probably, you know, if all goes well, he's probably a bottom pairing guy in the NHL, and that's fine. He can develop into that. He can hit 205 pounds, 6 foot already. He can bash guys in junior, and he thinks that'll translate in the NHL. But that, like, last year, and I made this point on the podcast originally, I thought that last year, they went forward, 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 goalie. This was set up to be the year to fix the defense. We'll see how it translates out. But with Quinn Hughes at the top, it's looking pretty good. And hopefully, pretty soon, when they list off their defensive prospects, they don't have to list Brisebois. Like, not every time. Like, I'll take it once or twice a year. But it's been every single time they go down their defense and the depth in the organization, and we always get a Brisebois.
Well, and we don't just get a Brisebois. We get it. He's the first name, and it's early in these scrums. Like, if they had a couple other players and then his name came up, fine. He's just one of a group. But
right.
It's always
it 45
him,
seconds in.
And they did throw Chatfield in there as well. The other thing, sort of the fallout that I've seen here since they drafted Hughes on Friday night, is this storyline now that the pressure's off Ulevi.
Well, that is absurd. Was that talked about on Saturday or Friday on the radio? Like, I can't believe people are tweeting that out. Did Jim say that?
Apparently he did. That now Ulevi doesn't have to be a power play guy. I think so. And I'm with you there.
I even go listen to this right now because
it was
fifth
overall pick.
No, Jim, the pressure. Did he really say that?
I believe.
Because the pressure is not fucking off Ole Ulevi. He needs to. Like, what? What do you mean the pressure's off of him? Because of
I don't
what?
Know. I don't get
What's
it.
What's Hughes even, like, he's talking like Hughes has already made it and won Norris's, if he's saying that.
And that Ulevi can just be he can be a bottom pairing guy too?
I got to go back. Before I freak out I got to go back and listen to it. Because I want to be calm, breathe deep breaths. No, Ulevi, I mean, he's got, like, Quinn Hughes doesn't fix everything. Like, it's a problem up and down that defense. 1 through 8. They need Ulevi to be great. If this thing is going to turn around, we can't just say, well, Ulevi can be a bottom pairing defenseman now and the pressure's off and he doesn't have to perform in the power play. You got him 6 overall.
I'm here. I was shocked when I heard it too, or saw it. Like, to me, Quinn Hughes is, he's the shiny new object in the organization. It does nothing to change the expectations or the pressure on Ole Ulevi. Again, this guy was a top 5 pick 2 years ago. You're telling me the pressure is off? Like, he's had the back surgery, and now they've drafted Hughes, and now there's no expectations whatsoever?
Oh, my God. I'm floored by that. I just can't believe that that's a take. Because they need... What's their future? I don't even get it. Like, if it's just going to be Hughes and a bunch of guys? We're not going to worry about Ulevi now. Like, Ulevi's got to be good. Like, they need Ulevi to be great. They need Hughes to be great. Then you have 2 left side guys in your top 4, and now we can start talking about having a decent defense going forward. And to me, from what I've seen and heard about Ulevi, he's not a guy you want to say the pressure's off. Like, he's always relaxed. He's like too relaxed. And even Sammy Sal was talking to him. He's like, I'm actually worried about Ulevi's body language because sometimes he can give off, and he didn't say this, but I'm paraphrasing. Sometimes he can give off the I don't give a shit attitude, and that's not going to work in the NHL. And Salo has talked multiple times about how they've tried to drill in his head that he's got to be in better shape. To me, doesn't sound like a guy that you want to say, you know, kick back and relax now, dude. We got Hughes here. Like, come on.
Just I know, like,
hit yourself to the ride.
Well, but if I'm the organization, you're right. Like, for all the things you just said, I would lump him in. Now we've got Hughes and Ulevi.
Yeah.
And kind of
now we got something going, boys. We got Hughes and Ulevi, and both are going to be great. Let's go. That's what I want to hear.
That's not what you heard.
They got the all-around guy. We got the all-around 3-zone defenseman in Ulevi. Super smart. He's going to help us on the power play. And now we've brought in our star skating, elite skater, dynamic defenseman in Hughes. In 3 years, we got a top 4 that's going to compete among the best in the league. Boom.
I think you're going to be waiting a while to hear that. Like, as excited as Jim was, I don't see him getting to that level with that kind of proclamation. Just don't see that one happen. No, I don't see that happening.
Pressure's off, you love it. Like, I want to go home right now, and like, I can't even believe that was said.
Well, I know, like, so I hear that kind of stuff, and I just think to myself, like, the Nashville Predators, Botch, were a great team. Like, they were a really good team this past year, built on this amazing defense, and they didn't get out of the second round. You know,
right?
Like, so,
and everyone's like, "Oh, PK's up for the Norris. He's not even their best defenseman."
Right, but I hear this.
They got Josie, they got Ellis,
Ekholm. Nobody talks about Ekholm. No.
Right.
Yeah, and they didn't get out of the second round. Like, they lost to a good Winnipeg team, but they didn't get out of the second round. And I hear this, the Canucks are 3 years away now. 3 years away from what? Like, you can make steps.
Wait, what do you mean? 3 years from having a team that can compete?
Compete,
can
for, be a,
compete in the playoffs. Can be a playoff team and can compete. Dude, it's got to be, no?
I look around the NHL, like, there are fucking good, like, really good teams out there.
Oh, man, if we don't have a good team in 3 years, come on. Are you for real? Are you for, we're, like, the Canucks aren't going to have a good team in 3 years?
For them to...
Everyone's got to be fired if that's the case.
Right, but for them to be a really good team in 3 years, everyone, all these prospects have to hit.
Right. Juolevi has the top. This is the case of every team, though.
I agree
your
with
top,
that.
Your first round top end picks have to hit. You can't, they missed on Virtanen, okay? They just did. He's not going to be that guy. Fine. Let it go. They got to hit on the rest. You know, the Jets hit on like 8 in a row.
That's my point. That's my point. So
yeah.
It's easy to say 3 years. Or, you know, three.
But if it's not, if they're not a good team in 3 years, let's all go home. Let's fold. No, but like what? It's they've got to be good in 3 years. Come on.
I'm excited about Pettersson. Pettersson. Have we come to a consensus?
We're staying with Pettersson.
Pettersson, okay.
Because he said, and okay, he said Pettersson because he thinks that that's how we want to hear. His name is Pettersson. Is that right?
I want you to say it like that. Every single time you reference him from this point forward. In fact, I want you to say my last name like that. Can you do that for me? No. Humor me. Come on. No.
Pattison.
Thank you.
No, but
I'm
yes,
excited.
Yes,
I'm excited.
I agree. Pattison has to hit. Hughes has to hit.
Right.
And guess who else has to hit? You fucking Levy! He's got to hit!
Oh, the pressure's off. He's on easy
Come
street.
On.
Easy street.
Like you're right. If they don't all hit in 3 years, they don't have a team. But they all have to hit because you got to nail these top 10 picks.
But okay, and I agree with all that. My point just is that's just to, it gives you a sense. I think people already know, but that's how hard it is to build a true contender. Like wanted Kevin Cheveld to have a run out of Winnipeg. Paul Maurice was supposed to be gone, and. You know, you talk about how they've hit on first round pick after first round pick, and finally they put this team together that got to the third round. But even then, they didn't get to the Stanley Cup final. They didn't win the Stanley Cup. Like, and the Winnipeg Jets are a damn good team, and they will be next year, and they should be for a couple of seasons. But I don't know, man.
No, I made this point. Like, to me, the Flyers are the example. They argue that Giroux should have got the Hart. Couturier should have got the Selke. Ghost should have got the Norris, and that doesn't even include Provorov. So there's four great players that they have at the top of their lineup. Three of them that people are telling me should all be in as finalists in awards, and their team sucked.
Yeah, and I come back, and we've talked about this too. Your deviled egg man, Drancer's Florida Panthers. Like, that's a good team. They just added Mike Hoffman, and they're a middle-of-the-road team with Aaron Ekblad as a number one overall absolute stud defenseman.
Right.
And then
yeah,
just
it's,
kind of
you're
middle
right.
of the
it's
road.
Hard. It's hard. But if in 3 years, dude, if the Canucks don't have a good team, it's all she wrote.
They're going to solve all their problems this week.
Oh, man.
Are you worried? Are you
nervous?
Well,
I'm worried. I haven't even heard this betting interview, but I'm already saying, like, it doesn't matter what happens with Juolevi. We're chasing grit and toughness. They're already linked to Jay Beagle and Tyler Bozak. Like, these are not things that infuse me with confidence. And I mentioned Bozak. I was actually on with Rojake. It's his final week, by the way.
I've heard.
He, you know what? He's a good, if I can go on a bro tangent for a moment. He's a guy, so this is his fifth year and he's leaving now. And he's a guy that a lot of people have certainly doubted. I didn't think he could do it. He did sports radio for 5 years, and I'm telling you, I saw recently the ratings book, 1040 morning show versus the 650 morning show, and it is the biggest obliteration I think I've ever, like, it was just a total shit kicking. So for that guy to have that many, you know, critics at the beginning, to go for 5 years and have those kind of ratings, I tip my hat, man. And anyway, so I was on with him this morning, kicking off his final week, and I asked a couple of the guests about Bozak, because I've heard that the Canucks like Bozak. I've heard Travis Green likes Bozak. I've seen Dhaliwal has already linked, said they've called about their Meehan and Newport about Bozak already. I'm expecting them to make a pitch for Bozak.
It doesn't mean I love Bozak, or I think like people are texting in, stop with all this fucking Bozak talk. And one guy texts in, you started all of this on the podcast. He texts, and I'm like, what?
Podcast is powerful. We know that.
I didn't start it all on the podcast. This is happening. Like, it's not, Bozak's not at the top of my list of a guy that they should spend their cap dollars on. But I do look at that center group, and Jim listed it off for me, you know, and he got Horvat, and he got Sutter, and then he went Gaudette. Who knows if Gaudette is even ready? He certainly didn't show me anything at the final, whatever it was, number of games that he was ready to be a consistent top nine player in the center in the NHL. And then after that, it was Gagné and Granlund.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There's no other way about it. I will say this. When I talked to Travis 2 weeks ago, he was really high. I didn't write about it, but just we were chatting. He was really high on what he saw from Gaudette. Again, those were five meaningless games at the end of the season in which he didn't produce a point. Right. And that's not knocking him. Like, he's a young guy making the transition, but Travis really liked what he saw and thought he got better every game. And so, you know, I mean, there was
but
something.
But you know how difficult it was for Horvat to transition,
absolutely,
right? It's very rare. We have seen it very rarely here where someone pulls a Brock Besser, steps into the lineup, and he is a special talent. And, like, I'm all for Gaudette playing. I'm playing lots. Play him, coach. I'd love to see it. I want to see Gaudette on the team. But he may struggle. Like, and you know, Horvat, who had, you know, the first round pedigree and all of that, it took him a long time to get it, and especially to get the offensive side of it.
Right. He had those long runs where there was no point production whatsoever. Like, you look at him now, and it's hard to imagine that, but, you know.
Right. So so if you put Gaudette as one of your centers, I don't think that that's a line that's producing much. Like, it'd be very difficult, if you're expecting that line to produce much, man, your expectations may be a little bit too high. And then we know Sutter's line's not going to do much. What are we left with? Beagle? Like, that's three lines that aren't doing anything?
Right. Now, look, this week here where teams have the ability to contact players and agents, Canucks aren't doing their due diligence if they're not making those phone calls. Just because they make the phone calls, these guys are unrestricted free agents. Like, they ultimately get the say. They're going to get their money wherever they go, right? So, I'm not worried when I hear that the Canucks have made calls. Like, look, the Bozak thing's been out there for months. Beagle, people have sort of been connecting that dot for a little while. My issue with a guy like Jay Beagle is, you know, a team like the Canucks, they see what he did for the Washington. Like, he was perfectly slotted as a fourth line center on a good Washington Capitals team. A team like the Canucks will throw money at him.
Turns out a great, the best team in the league, it
right.
turns out.
And so. But a team like the Canucks, where they are, they'll throw money, they'll throw term, and they'll also try to play him higher. Look what he did in Washington. Imagine what he could do for the Canucks.
Right.
Like, that's what I hate about free agency. We see it time and time again. And so I am a little concerned. They got all this money.
Right.
That doesn't mean they're going to spend it. But I'm worried that, you know, okay, Bozak next year, could he insulate young guys and help? Sure, for a year. But they're not getting them for a year.
No.
You're getting them for 3 or 4. And, like, that's right. Where it gets stupid, because 3 years from now, when they're this amazing team
look, I didn't promise an amazing team, but they better be good. I'm not doing this for
another. Right, but where would a Bozak
7 years into the gutter?
Where would a Bozak slot in 3 years from now when you've got these emerging guys, and now you're going to have this, like, 34 going on 35-year-old who's probably getting way more than he deserves?
Fourth line. But I expect him to get 4, 4.5, but the guy in Dallas, they were telling me he's going to command 5.
Right, and right there, like, I'm out if I'm the Canucks.
Yeah.
I think you can find somebody on a short, and again, free agents want term, and they've worked to get to this point. Like, I hear Riley Nash, I understand it, 29 years of age, there aren't many guys under 30. He had a nice season in Boston.
Yeah.
He's going to command some, and there's a team out there that's going to look at his numbers and see that he's 29, and they think that they can get 4 years out of him, and they're going to overpay him. Like, yeah, he's got ties to British Columbia, played in the BC Hockey League, all that. Great. If the Canucks would get him at a manageable figure, I'd be kind of intrigued by a Riley Nash, but
I think they will try to get a younger player. They're certainly focused on that, you know, 25 and under crowd and adding more players of that age. So, and I think of 31 Thoughts, where
Friedman said Tobias Reeder would become a free agent. And that's a guy the Canucks have chased before. They made offers with the Coyotes or talked to the Coyotes when he was available. So I think that that potentially could be a target. I think he's 25. I'm not thrilled chasing like 32-year-old Beagle and 32-year-old Bozak. I don't think that that fits in with what they're trying to do. But if they had traded Sutter and got a nice return there, we know, as I've said before here, the three California teams called about him. Turns out Pittsburgh's called about him as well. Man, if you could get a return there and then have Bozak plug that hole for a couple of years, 3 years, I don't know. There's worse plans than that, I think.
Right, but that involves a trade of a player on the current roster, and that's what, even with the defense, like, it's great that they got Hughes and Wu, but we sit here.
I know.
Like, we're a week away from their team essentially being shaped for next year.
I know.
And they have the same crappy top to bottom, no offense from the back end, unless Quinn Hughes turns pro and makes this team, and I don't see that happening this year. So,
and I heard at the beginning of the weekend that there were either calls or people called them. I think with the Canucks, it's always people called them.
It seems to be.
They ever make calls? But Gudbrandsen's name was making the rounds when I first got there. But then they draft Hughes, and I can just see them thinking, like, okay, we got the 5'10" guy. We've got another 5'10" guy in Stetcher. We can't trade Gudbrandsen. He's the one big guy that they have, right? Like, I can definitely see them thinking that through. And then if you're taking that avenue, if you're worried about who Hughes is going to play with in a year or 2 years from now, then you have to worry about who's he going to be paired with, right? Like, they want him on the left side. Yo Levy's on the left side. Sure as fuck don't want him playing with Gudbrandsen. Like, that's my nightmare.
Right, and I know where you're going with
Quinn Hughes comes into this league and has to play with Gudbrandsen. Like, God help us all. Kill me now. I do not ever want to see that. So then that leads me down to that, shit, he's got to play with Chris Tanev. Like, what other, unless they go out and acquire a stable, reliable defenseman, and they may, like, this may happen, because I know that we both know they want to change this defense. They do not want it to look like it does right now when the season starts.
That's fine. You can say it a billion times until they actually do something about it. Like,
right.
That's what worries
me. They will. They're going to do,
I don't, because I,
next week.
Well, but
this week, they are going to do something. It's not going to be the same. It can't be. I'm not going to do it.
on my watch. Hang on, you were going to walk away after 3 years. Now it sounds like you're going to walk away after free agency. But like,
I'm
there's so much
Winnipeg.
Focus on center, and they need help at center. But you look at the left side, like, they need help there. Like, they have to be in on some sort of left winger, I think, as well. They got Berchi and they got Leipzig on the left wing, and then it's like Gaunce. Like, that's your left wing for the Vancouver.
Eriksson can play left.
Well, we don't know where Eriksson's going to play or who he's going to play with, or he can play left. You're right. And I think they're looking at the center. I think if they can find a guy that could help them on the left side, I think they should be looking there in unrestricted free agency. It wouldn't surprise me if somehow they wound up with another defenseman through all of this.
Yeah. Right. But
this crazy log jam, right. You can't just keep adding unless you're at some point you do have to subtract.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they can talk extension with Edler. It wouldn't surprise me if they signed a contract with Alex, like an extension for Alex Edler at some point. Like, this isn't working. Like, at some point, you have to reshape that blue line.
Right.
And I keep waiting for it to happen. Didn't happen at the draft. Tanev's still here. And now I can totally see where you were, you know, painting that picture of, oh, Quinn Hughes, perfect defense partner, like long-term extension for Tanev when his deal comes up.
Right. But I'm not sure Tanev wants
any part of that.
Yeah. I right now I would answer that question with no. So,
and on the grit and toughness and,
well, here's the other thing. You point out all these, like, yep, they need help in the wing, top six. Well, they need a top nine center. Need an offense can produce offense. And what's Jim out there talking about is we got to get more grit and toughness.
But Travis said that too when I talked to him. And so, look, Travis Green,
know
how much he played.
Travis said that, but I don't care what Travis said. If I'm the general manager, it does not matter. I would not care what a coach. You cannot let a coach dictate your personnel decisions. Like,
and
all of a sudden you end up with Lyndon Vay in your power play. Trading a third for Derek Dorsett. No, you can't let... I know that Travis wants grit and toughness. I know he thinks the team was soft all year long. And I totally get where he's coming from. But from a team personnel side of it, you can't be focused heading into the next 2 weeks on grit and toughness. You can't.
That's fine, but the Washington Capitals just won the Stanley Cup with Tom Wilson and Devontae Smith-Pelly, and they had Brooks Orpik, and they had guys that, so yes, they won the cup with skill, but they had these guys that, you know, I mean, you're sort of at the leading edge of this, you know, the old hockey guys and these ways of thinking.
Right.
Like, that's what people will point to. Ryan Reeves played this role for Vegas. He couldn't get in at the very end. I heard at the draft,
one GM told his group, like, we've got to get a Smith-Pelly.
Yeah.
And someone said, what, a guy that does nothing all season?
That's the worry.
Shouldn't be
though.
Too hard. Those guys are available.
Right. But Travis Green, like, leaned heavily on Derek Dorsett until Dorsett couldn't play anymore. Then there was months there where they hated how soft they were and they were getting pushed around.
Yeah.
And then Darren Archibald shows up and plays. And quite frankly, I don't think Darren Archibald did enough in his audition.
No.
Like, he would have had a contract by now from the Canucks if they thought he was the answer. But remember, too, last year, you know, Ryan White brought in on a PTO.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of player.
Yeah.
I absolutely expect that the Vancouver Canucks in free agency are going to go, whether it's Antoine Roussel or there were a couple of guys out there.
Your boy Jay Beagle's going to get it done.
But I don't think I think Beagle's a good defensive center who embraced sort of the fourth line. Like, I don't see him as a shit disturber and a guy that's out there looking for trouble.
He's not soft. He's not going to be.
No, he plays hard. Yeah. But in terms of a guy that's willing to mix it up and stand up for teammates and those types, like, I think it would scare me. But a guy like Cody McLeod is available as an unrestricted free agent. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, that kind of name. And this is just speculation on my part. I'm not saying there's anything to link Cody McLeod, who, quite frankly, I thought had played himself out of the NHL, but it wouldn't surprise me. In fact, I'm expecting that some player that fits that mold will be among the Canucks free agent signings here in the next week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly sounds like that's the direction that they've been going for some time. But it's not going to make them any better. It's not going to help them in terms of getting points.
No, but would you rather have a guy that has some degree of pushback in his game or Brendan Gaunce on your fourth line? You know, like, those are some of the decisions. And I know we're not solving their problems by looking at their fourth line here, but, you know, when you look at the makeup of the hockey club, like, is there a spot for Brendan Gaunce in?
I'd probably depending on the guy, I may rather Gaunce. Like, yeah, I'd rather wish he was more physical, but he doesn't get. You know, generally controls play when he's on the ice. They control possession when he's playing. Like, there are a lot of worse fourth liners to me out there than Brendan Gaunce. I think he's a fine fourth liner. I'd be fine with him.
But doesn't he kind of, you could say the same things about him that you could say about Devontae Smith-Pelly in the regular season.
Doesn't do anything all year. Yeah.
So, we'll see where we go. I mean,
these guys are coveted now. Everyone's chasing a Smith-Pelly. They got one right here in Vancouver. Doesn't do anything all year.
Well, who's that team that wanted one? Maybe there's a deal to be had then.
Right.
But something has to happen. They can't continue to stockpile. Like, at some point, this team has been bad for 3 years. What they've got here isn't working. The defense, to me, is the poster child for so many of the Canucks' problems. But I keep waiting. Like, now the draft has gone by. Another opportunity for trades. Like, we talked about the trade
but nothing
deadline.
Really it's hard to criticize them for that because
nothing went down. I agree.
It clearly was not a fertile ground for, like, player transactions. I want to be mad that nothing happened in terms of rejigging this roster or in terms of even trying to trade some of these vets for middle round draft picks. You can't tell me that they couldn't have traded one of these guys for some kind of mid round pick, right? Like,
I would have thought so too.
Like, get another third, get Wise and Madden in the third. I mean, there must have been options. There had to have been options there. And, you know, I know that, you know, obviously teams were interested in Sutter. Tanev I get because the offers have been low. From what I've seen, they've been low. And I understand that one. You can't just give Chris Tanev away.
We have to take a moment here.
Moment of silence?
Well, I don't know if it's a moment of silence. We just have to take a moment to acknowledge the end of the Chaput era with the Vancouver Canucks. We don't have to worry about whether it's Chaput or Chapu.
Chaput. That was probably the dead giveaway that Travis Green had no time for him, that he mispronounced his name the entire season. Yeah, you know, unfortunately, we will never forget Willie's team from Meghna and Chaput. Like that, those three guys will be linked for eternity. And I think that, and because I'm not sure, I don't think Willie's ever going to be a head coach in the NHL again.
No, neither do I. Neither do I. I do wonder about the Canucks coaching staff, though. I still think that it's weird that
they kind of, Kuche's gone,
and we'll talk about him in a sec. But it sounded like somebody asked Jim down in Dallas too. Like they refuse to say that the coaching staff is back intact, and right. Yet July 1st coming up at the end of the week here. Like at some point,
yeah. But he keeps saying the one thing he kept saying was we want to get through the draft, we want to get through free agency, and we want to get through development camp, and then shit's gonna happen. So then
that's the timeline. Okay,
he said that for the coaching changes. For the captain, there was like four or five things that he said over the course of the weekend that were all going to happen.
Right, but meanwhile, if they have their eye on, if they're changing the coaching staff at all, like candidates are getting jobs elsewhere. Like you don't want to leave that too deep into the summer.
Draft, got to deal with that. Got to deal with free agency. Got to focus on that. Got to focus on development camp. Then it's time to turn. And they may have guys already lined up. Like,
right, but if they're holding them off, won't those guys get a little antsy? Unless, are you saying the deal is done and they just haven't made an announcement?
I have to believe that.
Like, and I read it in the Provies too. Like, you think they've got their goalie coach? You think they are?
I don't know. But some people I talk to believe that they've zeroed in on a candidate already. The Canucks, you know, stack of Bibles were swearing like, look, no, we're just starting this process. Kluche is a part of it. We've got 20 names. We're going to start going through it. So, you know, and obviously Travis has to be heavily involved in that, and Kluche is heavily involved. And it's a tough one for Travis because him and Kluche had a great relationship, right? Like, it's hard to have a goalie coach who's also a great person, who has a great chemistry with the head coach. They had all of those three things, and who also jives well with the current goalies, and Kluche had all of that mix. I think in a lot of ways he was perfect and had the perfect kind of personality for the job, perfect kind of demeanor for the job and for working with Travis. I think that they were very close, and I don't. There's nothing untoward about this one. This was purely a difficult family decision. And there are times in your life where you're family first, and you've got to reevaluate your priorities. It's not an easy job. It includes a ton of travel, a ton of hours. I think that's unfortunately how it went down. He's got to find a guy that he can get along with. So even if it's a guy that Kluche loves and it's a guy that Linden likes, it's ultimately also got to be a guy that can get along with Travis Green too.
And what's your understanding of like Kluche's stepping back but not stepping out of the picture?
They don't seem to know.
Or?
Yeah, they're hoping that he's still involved with the friend. Like the story I got. Was and they may know, maybe they're holding back on me, but they said that they're hoping that Kluche will still be involved in the organization, and he could take like a developmental overseeing role. He could be a guy that, he's obviously, I mean, if he's staying on to help in the search for his replacement, I would think that means that he's going to have a role somehow going forward. He may help them scout other goalies. It may be, you know, one of these overarching roles. So I'm not sure. I know that they hope he stays with the organization. Yeah.
Yeah. And you talk about the amount of work that goes in. Like I did always marvel, there's a hell of a lot of travel. We know that. You know it better than I do. But after having spent last year out on the road, like you are away from your family. He's got a young family. But on top of that, like, you know, the Canucks would play one night if they had back-to-backs. You know, the team would take the morning off, but there generally would be a goalie on the ice with a couple of the guys that weren't going to play that night, and the goalie coach would be there. Right. So you got to be up. You got to be at the rink again. There wasn't a ton of downtime, and I always marveled at that. And even on practice days where the full group was skating, there was Kluche out, you know, half an hour before practice with his two goalies and putting them through drills and working on technique things. And so there was. I can say firsthand that the guy put in the hours. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and he was a forward thinker. I think he was a modern goalie coach. He had a lot of really good pros going for him. Very few cons. Had a special relationship with Thatcher Demko. If you talk to Demko and how it all turned around in his first pro year in Utica, he lathers up Kluche for all his support and his guidance and his coaching and conversations that they would have on the phone. I think Demko felt really comfortable when the chips were down at any point picking up the phone and calling Dan. So I think it was a relationship that went beyond just coach pupil. It went to like a personal level, and it's unfortunate that they're not going to be, you know, with the Canucks building something together at the same time.
Well, that's another thing to put on the plate. Where does that all fit in the timeline of that?
It's I got to take care of draft. I got to take care of free agency, and I got to take care of. I always thought it was weird. He kept throwing in development camp. Like, what? Like, come on, development camp.
I don't know. They look like they've got one of the smallest rosters, like around the NHL, coming to their development camp. So I don't know how much.
Like, is he around? Like you. Because is Jim around development camp all the time?
I thought it was a Ryan Johnson production.
I know. I'm not sure. But anyways, he wants to get through all of those things. And we're going to have a captain. We're going to have new coaches.
See, let Ryan take care of development camp. No, let Ryan take care of it. And then Jim can step away. And he could have, like, be handling some of these other
duties. Yeah, I don't think Jim's around. Like, my recollection, maybe I'm wrong. I'll have to. Yeah,
he can show up for the game on that Thursday night. But no, that one's.
Oh, there's enough for a game on the Thursday?
Apparently. I don't like maybe they'll add fill out the roster. I mean, they had the preliminary roster and no Patterson. So that was just Patterson? A warning. I mean, I understand it, but again, just like
he's not there?
No.
He's not.
Nope. They're letting him stay in Sweden and train all summer and then he'll come hit the ground running for prospects camp or summer, you know, the young stars or whatever.
That'll be the arrival?
I think so. Yes.
Holy shit.
So all right, we covered a lot of ground, as we always do. Now, we should say as we finish up here that nothing's finalized yet, but there are rumblings that we're heading back to Woody's Pub out in Coquitlam.
Oh, right.
After free agency. So next week at some point.
We're not going to wait for after development camp?
No. I think it'll be during development camp, but I think once we get a sense.
Free agency, development camp, Woody's.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe then Jim will
So stick around because we'd love to see people come out. We've had some fun doing that in the past and got some good feedback. And it might be a nice way to kind of, you know, just wrap up the season because after that, I think podcast's going to go quiet for much of the summer unless there is this massive blockbuster or something that forces us to get back in here. But it looks like one more podcast after free agency and then, you know, we'll pick it up again once the season rolls around. So again, you know, the Durrell podcasts are always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. You can check them out online, eagleridgegm.com or 2595 Barnett Highway, a couple blocks west of Coquitlam Center. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, by all means, we encourage you to use Eagle Ridge GM. They support us and we ask that you support them. Botch, what's ahead for you this week? Are you on the UFA?
I'm not thinking. I'm doing draft, free agency, development.
Draft's
camp.
Done.
That's my strategy.
Draft is done.
Nope. Oh, so it's free agency is up next.
All right.
Be on Jay Beagle Watch.
Okay, we look forward to that. All right. Thanks to everybody that checked us out here on the podcast. Again, next week, go to Woody's. Look for some details online. We'll make sure to get them to you. That is going to do it for us, the post-draft edition of the podcast here on Province Radio.